Welcome to Gym Shorts Podcast. I'm your host, Kathy Smith. Hello, and welcome to Gym Shorts Podcast. I am so honored to be talking to my twin sister today about housing security for kids. Welcome, Christy. Your work at St. Croix Valley Habitat for Humanity brings a spotlight to the very reason we're here today, to talk about raising healthy kids.
Okay. I'm really excited to be here. Thank you so much. You know, education is everything to you, to our sisters, to our mom. I even thought college classes at one point. I know that
educator.
You're so passionate about it. And I am from the housing side as well. I think there's a natural tie here. So I'm so glad that we're talking about this. Thanks for including me today.
Thanks. I love it. Well, let's just get started. Christy, it's interesting when we think about health, we don't automatically think about housing, but I am sure it's foundational for sustained growth and development in children. Tell us a little bit about Habitat for Humanity's mission, and does it involve kids?
Yes, Habitat for Humanity is one group doing affordable housing in this country and across the world, and we value what a stable, safe environment does for all people, especially kids. 78% of the homes that we sell and have partnerships with families have kids in the home under 18. We know there's a direct link between safe and healthy, affordable housing to children's educational outcomes all the way through college. So talking about this today is really important, and it's part of what Habitat believes is a core connection to changing lives and into more stable economic situations, environmental situations, and opportunities as well.
So when you're looking at the homes that you build, what percentage of those homes do you think are going to families with children? And is that a priority for the family selection process?
That's a good question. You know, like I said, we probably 3/4 of the homes that we partner with have families in the home. Doesn't mean that we don't sell homes and partner with folks individually as well. So some are seniors looking for a better opportunity for retiring. Some are single people or people without kids, and that works too. So it really depends on the need of the family that applies to the program. We base our applications on income. They need to make a certain percentage of the income in our communities. So here in our two counties that we serve, that area median income is pretty high because we're part of a metropolitan real estate market. And therefore, we work with between a 40 to 80% of the area median income as a qualification. And then, like everybody, we believe that you should not pay more than 30% of your income on homes, so that you can afford everything else: education, transportation, the basics of good health care, but also that you can live in an economically diverse neighborhood. That we also see that connection to better educational outcomes when folks are living next to neighbors and we can learn from each other, and kids have access to better performing schools as well when they're in more of a mixed and diverse neighborhood.
Love that. So from some housing data in 2021, it says that 33% of families with children had a housing cost burden, meaning they paid more than half of their income on housing. You mentioned that for Habitat for Humanity, you're trying to make it so people can afford those other things. So that same year, 6% of homes with children had physically inadequate housing. And then in 2022, 17% of children experienced unstable housing, which includes living in households that were unable to pay rent or mortgage on time, moved frequently, or were homeless at some point in their lives. Are there correlations between housing insecurity and the health of children, do you know?
There are definitely housing correlations with housing that is either unstable, unhealthy, for whatever reason. There's direct links to asthma, to increased environmental stressors, to even mental health considerations. And as you know, as a teacher, when a kid has to deal with the physical parts of just making the day work, there goes their learning opportunities, right? It's pretty tough. So starting out in the morning in the same place you started out yesterday morning changes everything for a kid. Having access to the food that they're going to eat that morning, even if it means coming to school, but they have a bus that they can get to school. It's such a correlation, and there's so many moving parts to just having a stable place to live and grow up. There are all kinds of numbers that we can quote about that consistency and how that changes outcomes for not only K-12, but then opportunities for college education as well. And we know even today that a college education allows someone to make a higher income, and that higher income is that generational shift and that generational wealth building that starts from just starting with a stable home. So it's a lifelong change to have something that is stable, healthy, and affordable. Because when you think about especially folks struggling with an income issue, if they don't have a house that they can afford, or their cost burden, like you talked about, paying more than 30% and oftentimes more than 50% of their income on homes, they're going to have to find something that may not be as healthy or as stable, or as, you know, without mold, or without, you know, the different things that impact a child from the health side of things as well. So we see the correlation between the basics, right? If there's a healthy environment, that's the family has enough money to put food on the table to send their kids to school, those kinds of things, again, balances out a much better success rate for kids in general.
You had mentioned maybe mental health too. Do we know more about that?
We call it residential instability. So children, especially when children with households and low-income situations who move more than once in the early elementary years, there's a direct correlation between negative reading and math achievement. Children from households with limited income who read below grade level by third grade are 6 times more likely to drop out of school than their proficient peers. And for every time there's a residential move, a student in a low-income household between kindergarten and second grade, there was a drop in test scores compared with residentially stable students from families with low income. So even the low-income piece can be pulled out of that when you look at how often is a student moving. Mm-hmm. From home to home. And again, it's all about those test scores and how they're going to move into reading. If they don't have you can talk to this, if kids don't have those basics, pre-K and early learning, they're already at a negative compared to their peers, and just goes from there.
And we know that kids third grade, if they're not at reading, they're going to struggle for the rest of their academic careers because they're having to play catch up. And so this information about the housing instability and the things that you are doing and the work you're doing is so important. And it's sometimes often overlooked when we're thinking about, oh, we want kids to learn how to read. We want them to learn how to write and do their math and everything else. But without the same place to put their backpacks every night and the same place to wake up in the morning and have that routine, that's already just a foundation for them, it's really hard, like you said, for them to have the stability to be able to go to school and learn, because they might be thinking about, where am I going tonight? Where am I going to stay? So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting statistic about children's and the whole generational wealth that housing can provide. If you look at children in families with at least 2 generations of low income, they're about 36 percentage points less likely to attend college than children from families with a higher income. So it is that generational wealth building as well, but the numbers are pretty stark. And you know, you look at, there's a statistic, children who moved to a low poverty neighborhood, so a diverse neighborhood with all kinds of incomes, before they turned 13 years old, at a 34% increase in college attendance rates between the age of 20 when compared with similar children who remained in neighborhoods with high poverty. And these same groups of children had a 35% increase in individual adulthood earnings compared with their peers in communities with high poverty. So that place, that home and housing place is very significant. And at Habitat, we're working really hard to think about what does a diverse neighborhood look like. A lot of times we struggle with NIMBYism. People say, oh, we don't want those people in our neighborhood. But what we understand with a mixed, diverse neighborhood is the educational opportunities are greater, but also learning from each other and understanding how communities thrive through that diversity is really important to how and where we place homes that we're building. So,
yeah, I totally agree. I feel like if we look at even the Japanese culture, they believe in very diverse neighborhoods and even multi-generations living in homes because of that support network that they have around them, the grandparents, you know, the parents, the neighbors, and what that can provide with, you know, playgrounds in the neighborhood and things like that. Because like you're saying, if they're in a more diverse neighborhood, they have more opportunity. So that's an interesting point. If families are struggling and they don't have somewhere to go, what are some things that you tell people when they're saying, Christy, I want to get a home. I want to have a place for my children. I want, you know, what are some of the steps that they need to take? What does that option look like?
When we're building a home, it takes time. So we're not a temporary or a immediate solution to that challenge. And that's why, as a part of the community, we look for all opportunities to help folks. And I just got a call from a family yesterday. And I get these calls every day, and it really breaks your heart because we can't build as fast as the need is here. There's such a critical shortage of affordable housing in this country. But there are ways to help, and there are different groups that can support some of, even if it's a temporary shelter situation. But for example, we work with USDA Rural Development. It's the arm of U.S. Department of Agriculture that offers low-income home ownership loans through their 502 loan program, it's called. And we work with them as a first mortgage, and then Habitat supplies a second mortgage. Again, we're trying to make sure that the families we work with are going to stay at that 30% or less of income. So there's going to be a gap oftentimes in the marketplace, especially when housing is at its highest right now. Everything from materials to labor to land are so inaccessible and so unaffordable for many. So we look at how do we look long-term at a community and what their needs are, but also if there's opportunities that we can't provide because we're limited in how much land we may have or how much funding we have at this moment. We work with USDA on that first mortgage. Everybody can actually work. USDA is open to everybody based on your income. So if it's not something that Habitat can do, we would try to find other solutions or help partner with other groups who might be able to take that burden at the same time. We just had that happen yesterday with a family, and her income is actually greater than our income allowances are, but it's a great example of even at 100% of area of your income, it's still the burden of all the things impacting us, especially post pandemic, that everyone's feeling the pinch. So we weren't able to help her, but we were able to connect her with some other opportunities in the neighborhood. She said, you know, I said, what's your biggest concern? And she said, I want my child to stay in the school district she's been going to. She's in band, she's in activities, she knows the teachers, she's got a social peer network. These things that maybe we take for granted, but from an education perspective, those are key to success for that child. And so, you know, we do have to think about everybody, not just who we serve 40 to 80% of the area meeting, but who's being missed? Where's that missing middle even? And then even those who are closer to the 100% of area median income, it's really tough out there for housing. And her situation was an unsafe and unhealthy home that they're currently living in. And that we know a lot about those unhealthy things too, as far as you know, if a home has asthma or it has, there's lead in the paint or some of the things that make a home unhealthy also impact educational outcomes. Because if a kid has to stay home because they have asthma, that's a day they lose from school, you know. So that healthy piece is also very correlated to how we see housing stability and connections to education as well.
So important, so much that I think sometimes we even take for granted, we don't even think about, but so necessary. You see a lot of tiny homes and these homes that are, you know, oh, you can buy a home for $20,000 as two bedrooms, what have you. What are your thoughts of that coming from what you do with housing stability? What are your thoughts? I would be interested to see what you think.
Yeah, I mean, we need housing for everyone. People need permanence. They need residence that they will be able to grow into, establish routines. It's also really important for our mental health that we have a safe place to sleep at night. You know, we don't do tiny homes where we are, but every Habitat is trying to lift the whole issue of the affordable housing and inventory. That's a huge issue for everybody around this country. And so some groups are looking at small tiny home villages. And you know, Habitat's not the only one doing this work. There's egg rural villages where folks are bringing in more of a mobile home type of situation, but they're permanently structured. And within a 5-acre lot, there's 15 homes. One corner has bees, one corner has gardens, one corner has, you know, so that they're really also looking at the agricultural impact of their housing and how that can benefit them as well. There's all kinds of different ideas out there. We are doing some work with modular housing. Modular housing is not what people think of as a mobile home, because it's actually just a home that's built like you would on site, but it's built in a factory and then shipped down the highway into pieces and then seams together once it gets to the site. The thing that's really exciting about that is it reduces the cost of a home by up to 30%. And the delivery time and from start to finish time is also reduced at least half. And so we're able to do more at a more affordable level when we look at other kinds of things like tiny homes like you're talking about, or modular homes, for example, or even some new technologies, which I'm a huge proponent of, 3D printing homes. It's that technology will change things as well. It's changing things already. So I think we have to look bigger and broader to what does a permanent house look like and how much space do we need to do that. And I'm going to get on a soapbox here, but I'm also say important that communities are looking at zoning restrictions and various building laws and permitting restrictions and how they can shift some of that as well at the municipal level to allow for more affordable housing opportunities into neighborhoods that maybe hadn't thought about it before. So
interesting. Yeah, I think the modular and the 3D printing just look like great opportunities, especially 3D printing going forward because of those other parts like our climates that are changing. And you know, with 3D building, it sounds like it's something that's more sustainable as our climate changes as well.
Definitely with wind resilience, and you know, we have to think about that as well. The environmental impact of building can be tough. Cement is not good for the environment per se. So 3D printing, for example, is a cement-based product, but it looks at how can we incorporate hemp, for example, or recycled plastics or different things to mix into that concrete base that are impacted and also affected by the places that we're building. So with the goal of resisting hurricanes or tornadoes or hail and damage, you know, and building sustainability into our roofing and even into the cisterns underneath. And how can we turn rainwater into, you know, usable water? So there's all kinds of conversations on that environmental piece that are also important, but also help people with affordable housing as well. Another thing that I would say too is you think about some of the basics. I'm going to go back to this education part that I know is near and dear to you as well, but something simple as living in a crowded home can lead to lack of privacy, loud study environments, sleep disturbances, behavior problems, and all those things impact a child's educational achievement and attainment. Adolescents living in overcrowded housings are less likely to graduate from high school by the age of 19, are more likely to have fewer years of educational attainment by 25. Children that are struggling with some of those basic issues then can also start to struggle emotionally and mentally, and that impacts their school attendance as well. I just think that it's really important for us to think a little bit more globally about behavioral, cognitive, and physical development and how that really contributes to the increased school absences and academic performance. Oftentimes, households that require affordable and healthy housing improve children's outcomes simply by where their home is located as well. There's something really important about that mental health piece for a child to not have to think about, where am I sleeping tonight? Am I in a safe environment? Is it a healthy environment? Is tremendously impactful at all ages of children's lives, but significantly at that very early stage, as you know.
I agree. Is there anything that I've missed, Christy? Do you have anything more that you want to share?
We think about what is a healthy home, right? A healthy home that is LEED certified, for example, it can lessen exposure to allergens and pollutants. If a home is, securely insulated, for example, temperatures in kids' bedrooms and the humidity that they're dealing with in the summer is affected as well. So it's interesting, the ability just to control the indoor temperatures and environment can actually help kids with their physical health, and then reduces their number of days that they stay home sick from school. There's so many parts. If there's no mold, no dander, there's a working stove and heating system. These basic things that we take for granted impact a child's ability to learn, right? Their ability to get to school, their ability to be at school, their ability to come home and study. So it's an automatic thing that we take for granted. Yeah.
If you think about, if kids are, unstable with their housing, they can't invite their friends to come play over because they don't have somewhere to go. They can't, have sleepovers and parties and things like that. They're just such a foundational piece. So,
amazing. Well, I think you can even think back to when we were kids, and we in elementary school, we lived in a neighborhood with a bunch of other kids. We really didn't think about it. It wasn't something that we had to think about. And then when we started moving after our parents divorced, that changed things, because now you have to think about all the other things besides just going to school and bringing your band instrument to class. You had to think about, do I have the same clothes that the other kids have? Do I look the same? Is my neighborhood not as good as their neighborhood is? You're thinking about these things in sixth grade that the other kids aren't thinking about. And maybe they aren't thinking, but they are, I'm sure. I mean, your teacher.
Middle school is such a tough time because kids are so judgmental of each other because they are just, they want to fit in. So they get clicky and they get, look at what the next guy has. I want to have that. I want to have more. And yeah, it really does impact kids. We went to 3 high schools in 4 years, and that's mm-hmm. not very stable either. And I think mom did the best she could.
She did. She knew these things,
Yeah.
They're just, and that's the thing, Habitat, we're a hand up, not a hand out. And she was that same kind of thinker where all I need is a step. If someone can help me get that step, I've got what I need, I might need a little more resources. But that's the idea behind Habitat, is we're here to give a step up, a hand up, so that you can make your life better. And you can take the basics, like a 30% or less of your income on a home, and then you can afford the other things that impact life. And then all of a sudden, I have a great story, and I'm sharing this with folks this winter. We met this woman. She had four kids. They lived in a trailer park that had holes in it, and she's okay with me sharing this story. She qualified for our program. We went through the process. It's a lengthy process because it put a hole in the ground. We start the build. You know, we rely on volunteer labor as well as in-kind donations to help us keep those costs down. So it's a slower process than you might see, but everything's permitted. And obviously we don't do our own HVAC or plumbing or electric or any of that. But so she walked along with us throughout this process, dedicating hours of her own time too, because that's a requirement of the program. Mm-hmm. And then she was so proud that for the first time, her kids, she had a 2-bedroom mobile home that had holes in it and animals on the roof. First time she was able to talk with them about having their own bedrooms. And I always get emotional, but the kids came to the closing and they're like, we know what we're going to do, how we're decorating our bedrooms. And they've been planning this whole time, what they're going to color, they're going to paint their walls and what they're going to hang on the walls. And so exciting for them. And so they moved into their home and they're able to start at their school. And meantime, while the homeowner was working on the labor, you know, that she was helping with the build of her home, she met some of our volunteers, and the volunteers worked for a bank, and they started to get to know her. And then when she moved into her house, they had a job opening, so she didn't have to work at a truck stop anymore. So she got hired by the bank. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden she had a better job, a house for her kids. And this year she got promoted at that same job, and they love her. I run into them in the community, and they just love her. She's so positive and hardworking. And that's the beauty of the story, right? That is what you change lives through, just that basic of having a house. And so I get emotional. Yeah. But it's a great story, and it's fun to see her succeeding. And that's the idea of a hand up, right? Just give someone a place to start and see what they do.
Yeah, thank you, Christy. Give some kids a lot of hope for their future.
Yeah, they're so excited. They're so proud. They have their own bedrooms.
That's so special. Well, on that note.
Sorry, I get emotional. I'm sorry.
It's okay. No, I do too. This needs to be more made aware of to people that don't think about that, and they don't have to think about that.
Yeah.
And they have the luxury of every child having their own bedroom. There are kids that don't have a place to sleep at night. And so,
yeah. And you know, it's not all about having your own bedroom for our program. We really look at the sex of the kids and the age differences and what works for that family. Some kids, you know, two kids in a bedroom, just fine with SGU. It really just depends on the family situation. So, but having a place that is theirs that they go to every morning, they get up in the morning, have breakfast at their little breakfast counter, and off they go to school and, you know, catch the bus and they do their things. So
everyone deserves that.
Yeah, we do. We all do.
Well, thank you. On a happier note,
that's a happy story. I just have tears. That's all.
It's a happy story. I know. I've got tears too. And so I'm right there with you. But it is a happy story. It's what you guys do is can't be measured. It's amazing. So thank you so much for that work.
Yes.
Every time we meet with our guests, we always like to ask one question. That's one of my favorite questions. Christy, what is your favorite childhood kids book?
Yeah, I think you know this one, but, so my oldest was born in 1999.
Yeah.
And so this book had probably just been out for about 4 years, because I think it was published in 1995, maybe. And it's now, everybody knows, it's like in 54 languages now. It's called Guess How Much I Love You. And it's the story about little Nut Brown Hair. He's a little boy, and the mom tells him a story, and it's about how much she loves him. And she just can't think about us. Like, what can I say that can help him see how much I love him? And she says, guess how much I love you. And I used to say to the kids all the time, we'd walk around because they both had colic. And so I think I told the story to the kids over and over, like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times. And I'd look at the boys and I'd say, guess how much I love you. And they would look at me. And the book says, all the way to the moon and back. And then we'd start the story all over again. But my favorite book, because it's just joyful about this mom who wants her baby to understand how much she loves him. And she can't think of a better way than to tell him all the way to the moon and back.
Yes, it's a wonderful book. All right. Well, Christy, thank you so much for all the hard work you do.
Thank you for what you're doing, too. I love education. You know that I'm so proud of you and all the teachers out there. So, and all the supporters of teachers out there, too. So thanks for having me.
All right. Have a good day, Christy.
Yeah, you too. Thanks.